Hey, that's right, ladies and gentlemen. You happen to hit the button with the triangle. That's right, the play button on the latest...
The latest sanative episode of V8 Radio, Kevin.
Sanative? Is that some kind of clean adjective?
Or? Well, you would think, but it really means conducive to physical or spiritual health and well-being.
Oh, wow. Well, then this is definitely sanative.
Amen.
Yes, so you are listening to the V8 Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Oostie, joined, as always, by our esteemed co-host, Mr. Mike Hubal Clark, who's having a sanative experience as we speak.
As I hope the rest of the listeners are as well.
That's right. The rest of the listener is.
The listener is, yes. What am I saying?
I
used a plural in there.
So for you listening at home, if you've heard the show before, you're aware that we do an automotive trivia question at the beginning of each episode of this show. And we save that answer to the end because that's just the people that we are.
That's how we do it.
That's right. So, Mr. Cueball, on this this cold January day, have you prepared a trivia question?
Yes, sir, I have. And this question is courtesy of our good friend of the show, Mr. Frank Simkowski. Hmm. Who fed this to me a long time ago, and I'm
thanks a lot, Frank.
You betcha, Frankie. You're the best, baby. All right, Kevin. So let's go back in time to the year 1969, and you find yourself heading out to your friendly neighborhood Plymouth dealer,
yes,
to pick up a 1969 Roadrunner.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, you don't see what you want in the lot, but so you sit down with your salesman, your salesperson, and you order up what you want from for your Roadrunner. And one of the things on your list is the air grabber hood. Really exciting stuff for you. But you live in a pretty hot climate, and you want to get air conditioning too. And that's where your sales rep says, "Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Oostie, but you can't have air conditioning and the air grabber hood at the same time."
Mm-hmm.
And you ask him, "Well, why can't I?" And Kevin, I ask you, why can't you?
That's a good question. Thanks a lot, Frank. Frank. Well... Man, that's got me scratching my head. So I know that you couldn't get air conditioning on Hemi cars. They just didn't offer it.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't, and that's because they couldn't really fit the compressor on the motor and get the whole thing under the hood.
It's a big motor.
Yes, but the air grabber hood was available on different engines and not just the Hemi.
Hmm.
I'm pretty sure you can get a 440 with an air grabber. And... there has to be an additional package that came with the air grabber, I'm guessing. So like in the Ford world, or in the GM world, you couldn't get, you know, there's a specific gear set that came with air conditioning cars. The, you know, like if you bought a Chevelle or say a Buick GS, you couldn't get the higher 364 or 391 rear gear because they didn't want to overspin the AC compressor.
Oh, okay.
So you got a 342 gear with those cars.
Mm, interesting.
So I'm wondering if the air grabber came with a couple other things on the car that were not conducive to the AC system, because I've seen air grabber mechanisms and, you know, it's a vacuum operated pop-up scoop.
Uh-huh.
They're pretty crazy looking. And I don't think it's a real estate concern. I don't think they occupy more space under the hood than would allow the AC system.
Okay. So Kevin says the air grabber came with other things that weren't necessarily conducive to a good AC operation.
Yeah, and that's kind of a stretch, but that's what I'm going to say. I don't know what they were, you know.
Well, that wasn't the question.
Right. Hey,
you don't need to know what they were.
Yeah, even better.
Yeah, right on. And that's your final answer.
That is my final answer.
Duly noted, sir. Duly noted.
Yes. Frank.
Frank, you're the best.
Yeah. When they reopen the McCacken show and I see Frank in person.
Yeah, I'm going to thank you proper, Frank.
Yeah, we're going to have a few words. All right. Well, I have come up with a trivia question as well. I didn't have to call Frank. I thought about this on my own.
Oh, you're just too good.
Well, so in the mid-60s, you know, the muscle car concept was pretty simple. It was, you know, high-powered engine, lightweight car. Here you go.
Sure.
Instant muscle car.
Absolutely.
But as the 1960s wore on, the popularity of muscle cars was on fire, and they were selling lots of them. Mm-hmm. And the manufacturers realized that they could start tacking options onto these cars to boost the bottom line and make them more expensive and make more money on them, like air grabber hoods.
Hey, how about that?
And air conditioning.
Hmm.
So those items were known by some people to kind of go against what a muscle car was. You know, you didn't have to have power windows and AC and all these other things in a muscle car.
Mm-hmm.
So there was an article in Car and Driver magazine in 1968 where they kind of threw the gauntlet down and said, hey, Detroit, you need to build a no-frills, back-to-basics, stripper, bottom-line muscle car so that regular people can afford them. And you know, it would have high performance, but it wouldn't be an expensive, bloated, luxury-laden mm-hmm. muscle car. So our friends at the Chrysler Corporation responded with a vehicle. They launched a car to do this. What was it?
Well, Kevin, it's interesting that you lay this question out because this is a repeat question.
Is it really?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Ah, man, and I thought my other one was a repeat question that I had in my head.
No, you asked this before, and I got it wrong at that point, but I think I remember what the answer is.
Do you want to get it wrong again?
Yeah, well, I mean, just for general principle, I just may just say a Pinto and make sure I get it wrong. I think the car you're looking for is the GTX.
Hmm. That is a great answer. Wow.
Yeah, I think it's the GTX. It may even be the Roadrunner, but I'm going to stick with GTX on this one.
Okay.
Gosh darn it. I should.
Is that your final answer?
Oh, yes, my final answer.
Awesome. Well, let's see if you you can be one for two on this repeat question.
Hey, I'm batting 500. I'm an all-star.
Yeah. How long ago was this? This had to be a while ago.
It was a while ago, but I remember the premise that you set up about Car and Driver laying down the gauntlet and Chrysler answering it.
It might be kind of fun to dig that up and see how close the question was to the first time I asked it.
Holy cow, it's word for word.
Yeah, right. Kind of a one-trick pony over here.
Yeah, how about that? Like you have a robotic memory. I like it.
Well, today I'm just happy it's working at all, so all right.
Right.
Okay, so your answer is the GTX, and that is duly noted as
well.
Thank
you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you're welcome. Mm-hmm. Right on. So as we record this, what is it?
Today is January.
The word.
Sanative. Oh, sanative.
Sanative episode of V8 Radio. It's the beginning of January, and it's cold where we are.
Mm-hmm. You're in your garage. I'm in my garage. You got your skull cap on. I got my skull cap on.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, where it's not cold is down in Florida. And as we are recording this, the Mecum Kissimmee auction is going on.
Ooh, right.
Yeah. And that's a big one. 3,000-some cars.
I think that's their largest auction, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Over a 10-day span.
Good heavens.
Yeah, and they've really done interesting stuff to promote social distancing and make it safe. You know, they're not they're trying not to have the most giant crowd that they've had in the past. Mm-hmm. They've got seats arranged that are 6 feet apart, and they're only letting bidders go down in front of the cars.
Right, I heard that.
At ground level, and, you know, that used to be a kind of a mosh pit down there. It was kind of fun.
It was kind of fun, yeah.
Right in the middle of the action.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, they're encouraging phone bids and internet bids as well, so sure. To get whatever they can. But it'll be interesting to see. I wish them well, and I know that even though we're in this strange COVID time, the demand for cool cars has not seemed to dwindle at all.
Nope. And that's a good thing.
It is a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Have you been watching any of that, Kissimmee?
I have not. Nope. Not yet. I probably, what I like to do is, you know, just kind of have that on in the background.
Sure.
I mean, realistically, who wants to listen to an auctioneer for 10 days? But it's cool that, you know, you can leave it on as background visuals and kind of follow along. I went through the docket to see if there was any familiar cars or super notable stuff. Mm. And I didn't really find too many things that I am that familiar with.
Okay.
You know, sometimes you'll find a high profile builder car or something.
Right. Like my good friend Chip Foose.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or something that we might have featured on VATV or on, you know, Muscle Car of the Week or something that we've been close to. But this time, I'm not quite sure. But there was a really good assortment of stuff. You know, some more collections are going up. And what we found is that usually the first few days are a lot of luxury cars.
Right.
And my guess is that some of those come from local dealers in Florida, you know, where they might load up a truckload of stuff and take it there
right.
just to sell them and move them right away. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, in prime time is when you get the really cool stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, what's cool also about the early days is not just luxury cars, but there are some old classics in there that maybe aren't numbers matching, or they're a driver quality, nice driver quality, and that could be had for such a much more affordable price than something that you see on, you know, on prime time. And it's really neat to see, like, oh my gosh, look at that 65 Cadillac convertible. It's amazing. And it went for, you know, $13,000.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. Especially when there's no reserve on the cars and they're going to go. So, yeah, it is kind of neat. In my office at the shop, I've got a screen on the wall, and I might just have the Mecham auction playing all day. We've done this in the past, of course, like when the Bullet, or when the, when the Bullet Mustang went across.
Yep.
And scored the highest amount of any Mustang, for sure. Yeah. It was neat to have the screen going because I knew the lot number, and we had a guesstimate on what time it was going to go.
Right.
So, you know, you don't want to get too distracted because you're trying to get work done. But, you know, sure enough, there's five people standing around the screen waiting for the thing to come across, which is cool, too. Mm-hmm. What I really need to do is get the screen up in the lunchroom for the team to be able to watch.
Oh, for sure.
While they're eating, but we've been a little scattered again because of COVID, and there's like people eating in multiple locations or in their car or whatever. But.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I eat at my desk most of the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I pack my lunch, eat it at my desk, and just kind of, you know, be apart, which is a bummer, but
well,
got to do what you got to do sometimes.
You can stream it on your phone.
Yeah. Yep. And I do sometimes.
Yeah, right on. Yeah,
just kind of like put it in the corner, just kind of keep it side eye on it, just watch it a little bit while I'm doing what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So speaking of you doing what you're doing, it seems like you got another shipment of GTO parts in the mail?
Yes, sir, I did. That final little push that you need to kind of make things happen. Our good friends at Ames Performance, not a sponsor of the show, by the way, was able to find everything I needed, and I have it all in my hot little hand, and I just, you know, things like the hard line from the fuel pump to the carburetor, PCV stuff, battery cables, radiator hoses, a couple of belts, things that were kind of old that you just want to freshen up and be new for this new start, new era for this GTO. So yeah, I got that stuff, and I was actually just talking to Randy, my buddy Randy today, who's who has my engine, and trying to make a plan to get out there and you know, at least get the heads primed and painted, and maybe get them mounted, and then I could measure for push rods and get those ordered and get everything fully assembled.
Yeah, that's cool, and I think it's pretty smart that you're doing it that way and replacing all those ancillary items, because the worst thing is when you go through the process of building a new engine, especially when it's taken some time and there's a lot of anticipation and mm-hmm. everything is, you know, getting ready for the thing to start, and you finally get to turn the key and, you know, yeah. you break the fan belt.
Right. You blow a hose, or you know, throw a belt.
And it sucks.
It does.
Yeah. And, you know, plus it's going to be all crisp and clean because you've repainted under the hood and the motor's yes. going to look fresh. And
yeah. That's another thing. You know, the way the car was set up before, it had an Edelbrock carburetor. It had like a rubber fuel hose going straight to it mm-hmm. with a fuel filter in line there. The PCV system was kind of cobbled together. I mean, there was some really heinous stuff under this hood. I mean, I love my father to death, but he was definitely a function over form kind of guy. And if it worked, then he was fine with it. I mean, like I said, I think I've mentioned before on the show, there were house wire nuts holding some wires together under
yeah,
that hood.
Right.
So those are the things I'm trying to get away from. And when yes. when I opened the hood, I want it to look correct. I want it to look right, and I want it to look nice. And to a lesser degree, but it's still there. If the hood is open and I'm at a cruise night and somebody walks by, I want them to say, hey, that looks pretty nice. Mm-hmm. You know, before they walk on by to the next one. So rather than say, holy crying.
Are those wire nuts?
Exactly.
Yeah, so, yeah. Well, maybe you could take the wire nuts and put them in the ashtray or something. And,
yeah, maybe just, you know, keep a little bit with me.
That's right. A little nostalgia there. Well, that's cool. Yeah. So mechanically then, like you said, you're still going to have to measure the push rods.
Correct.
Once you get the heads on and
right.
and all that. And then you should be ready to complete that assembly and throw it in, and you'll be driving the sucker in no time.
Oh, that is the goal. So Kelly set a goal for me to be driving it by spring. So
there you go.
That's my new goal. Thanks, Kelly.
Yeah, well, that's what happens. Did I ever tell you the story about when I put a motor in my 69 Riviera, and it was, I'm trying to think of the time frame here. So I had my 70, which was a very cool car. Liked it a lot. I ended up kind of blowing that thing apart to kind of do the restoration on it. But I was mm-hmm. in college. I didn't have a lot of money, and you know, that mm-hmm. kind of stalled out. So, my dad was gracious enough to spot me some cash to buy another car, and he thought I was going to get, you know, like a Honda Civic to drive around to work every day. And of course, I go to California and pick up a 68 Riv, or 69 in this case.
Right.
I've had a bunch of them. So this car was, it was tan with a brown vinyl top, tan interior, bench seat, hubcaps, original 430 under the hood. And I flew out to LA. I found it, you know, again, back in those days, you'd look at the recycler newspaper, mm-hmm. you know, to try and find stuff. And this is 1996, and the recycler just started putting their ads online. So I was actually, you know, searching these early ads online, and I was like, oh man, now I can search this stuff out from the Midwest, because mm-hmm. I was living in a Chicago suburb. And I found this car, and it was like $2,200 or something, you know, a rust-free California, you know, 69 Riv. So I call the guy, and he sends me pictures, and, you know, it's on. So I end up getting the plane ticket, and you know, there's a little bit of a risk there to fly across the country and drive a car home that you don't know.
Right. Right.
Especially one that's, you know, 2.5 decades old at that time. But what the heck did I care? You know, I was in my
20s. I'm invincible.
That's right. I can do this.
Nothing's going to happen to me.
Right. And I think one of my first screw-ups was not being cognizant of, you know, the space relationship of how big the United States actually is.
Ooh.
And I'd done that drive before, but my timing was kind of messed up. So I land at LAX, and the guy selling the car, I'll never forget, his name was Hal Gerson. And Hal is like a 78-year-old guy. And he comes and picks me up at the airport, and he's going to take me to this neighborhood in LA, kind of borders Beverly Hills, where the car is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, it was in Beverly Hills at his friend's house. And something, you know, Hal was a nice guy. He was, you know, really, he didn't really want to get to the car yet. He wanted to kind of tour me around, and he wanted to get lunch, and you know, and I'm trying to oblige this guy, but I'm on a schedule here, you know.
Right.
I'm supposed to be, my goal was Vegas that night, and it's like, it's like, you know, 1 p.m. at this point, and I got to kind of get moving, you know. So he had told me that he took the car to his local repair shop, some Union 76 station, and they put belts on it and spark plugs and had a tune-up and, you know, checked the tires and everything. And he said, it should be fine for a road trip, you know. And he handed me a receipt showing me, you know, that work was done.
Mm-hmm.
And we get to the place where the car is, and it was very well represented. It was exactly what he said.
Good.
It looked just like the picture. It started right up. It was a nice car, you know. Mm-hmm. It was cool. So I'm like, hey, which way to the 10 freeway so I can, you know, get to the 15 and go to Vegas? And he's like, well, come on in for a minute. I want to show you something. I invent stuff. And I've got some inventions I want to show you, you know. And I'm like, oh, man, really? And one of his inventions is actually a product you can buy today, I think. It's a cooling fan for laptops. But this one had like humps molded into the bottom that would contour to your legs. So if you had your laptop on your lap, you could put this thing on there and it would blow cool air on the laptop and it wouldn't fry your legs, you know. And so, you know, some of this was interesting. I'm like, well, yeah, that's pretty cool. You know, you'll probably get somewhere with that. But I started to get the feeling that, you know, Hal maybe wanted to go on a date.
One last ride, Hal. Oh, man.
Because every time I try to leave, he's like, no, you know, why don't you stay? Stay the night. You know, you can crash over here and we'll go to dinner and, you know, I'll show you around Hollywood and everything. I'm like,
oh,
man,
my gosh.
Listen. And I know, you know, I'm trying to decipher if this is just lonely old guy.
Uh-huh.
Or
amorous old guy. You're Hal's boyfriend.
Yeah, right.
Not that there's anything wrong with that, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, I was just not on the market at that time.
Right.
And not in the market for for late 70s, you know.
For a late 70s daddy.
Right. You know, swinger gigolo from Southern California. So I finally, I just kind of forced my way out. I'm like, okay, well, listen, I paid you. I really got to go. You know, this is nice. And I said, look, I have intentions to come back, you know, because I eventually live there. And I said, if I think of it, you know, and I still have this car, maybe we'll go out to lunch, you know, someday, right?
Oh, geez.
Oh, yeah. Okay, great. So as I'm driving away, he's like patting me on the shoulder through the window, you know, and I look in the rearview mirror and he's like reaching for me.
Stop leading him on, man.
Dude. So I consider myself kind of lucky to get out of there when I did. And I just put gas in the car and hit the road. You know, I don't think I really scrutinized this thing under the hood. I checked the oil on it, you know, and just kind of looked it over, but it ran fine. And, you know, here we go. And I made Vegas that night. It was very late by the time I got there, and woke up the next morning, and it took me my, 3 days or so to drive back home. And mm-hmm.
Did you call Hal that morning?
No, I did not call Hal.
Did he call you?
He said, for a good night story.
Yeah.
a little tuck in.
I just wanted to call you and be the last voice you heard tonight, Kevin.
Right. Picture me. No, that didn't happen. So I get the car home. Everything's fine. No problem.
Cool.
And, go to bed and wake up the next day. And I'm anxious to show my buddies this car that I bought, So mm-hmm. I drive over to my friend Steve's house and, we're checking it out and everything else. And I go to restart it and it doesn't start.
Oh, hell.
Well, it threw the timing chain.
No way.
Only after I got home.
Oh, man.
It was unbelievable timing.
Literally.
Literally, yeah. So I think we flat towed it a couple of miles back to my house, my parents' house where I was living.
Uh-huh.
And I had the 455 that was out of my 70 Riv that was in pieces.
Mm.
And the engine was assembled, but the car was not. So I thought, well, this would be a nice upgrade. I'll just yank this 430 out and throw this 455 in its place. And mm-hmm. car will be that much better. So on the first evening, I borrow an engine hoist from a friend of mine, and I take the hood off, and the hood on that car is almost as tall as I am standing up.
Right.
I mean, it's a big, heavy hood.
Sure.
And I'm by myself. So I get the bolts out of it, with an air ratchet, and, you kind of tip the thing, and it's kind of on my head and my shoulder and everything. And I haul the hood, luckily, into the garage. And then I start undoing everything to take the motor out, the ancillaries and the wiring and all that stuff. Well, late that night, it starts raining on me, of course, because it's summertime.
Absolutely, yeah.
So I rig up this blue tarp over my work area that's kind of, clamped to the garage door and, behind the garage. And the neighbors are driving by and are like, oh, this is great. This is another derelict car.
That OST kid.
Yeah, and numbnuts out there wrenching on it in the middle of the night in the rain. So I get the motor out and I'm thinking that's a day, right? So I set the engine down on the ground, and I go to bed. And in those days, my schedule was way off. I would sleep pretty late in the morning, mm-hmm. to mid-late morning, 10, 11 o'clock. And then, nice. But I'd work till 2 in the morning.
Oh, okay. Just
time shifted everything later. It was a, college summer, and I was fortunate enough to have some time off of my summer job to be able to do that. So I could go out the next day, and my engine's gone.
Get out of here.
The 430 I took out is gone. It's no longer behind my parents' garage next to the car where I had laid it. And I'm like, what the heck?
Oh, my gosh.
And there's a, like a ditch from where this engine got dragged through the gravel in the alley up to the main part of the alley from the driveway, which was, 25 feet or so. It was clearly on our property. And then it was gone. So my dad was a police officer, and I knew a lot of the cops in town.
Mm-hmm.
So I called one of my buddies who was a police officer and also a car guy. And I said, hey, my engine disappeared last night. And he said, yeah, you know what? It's the scrap guys. That's a good hunk of iron. So
yeah.
they scrapped it. And I said, well, that's not cool. They stole it,
Yeah.
It was clearly on our property. And then I noticed also they also took a Turbo 400 transmission.
Oh, geez.
That was basically in the backyard. It wasn't for that car, luckily, but So the police officer says, well, you know what? We see them leaving town every once in a while, their trucks, piled up like Sanford and Son. Maybe we'll ask and see if, there's an engine on board or something.
Sure.
And this is... this is, you know, it's bad, but it's funny.
In the meantime, I just picked up a 430 Buick engine. I'll sell you real cheap, Kevin.
Yeah, right. Well, what ended up happening is they found the scrap guys, but they didn't find the engine. But they, you know, and this is 25 years ago, they garnered enough information from the scrap guys to understand that, yes, they grabbed it.
You know? Oh, wow.
And they were, these are the type of people who, you know, speak Spanish only in that situation when they're being interrogated. And when they're on the street, they speak English, you know.
Correct.
And the police officer didn't speak any Spanish. Mm-hmm. So he's kind of yelling at them, and he gets out of them that, you know, oh, we thought it was scrap.
Mm-hmm.
So he starts looking at the truck.
Oh,
and
boy.
He sees that this truck is way overloaded, and it's got a taillight out, and he deems it unsafe to drive at this point because
the
tires are about to blow out because it's piled to the, you know, 20 feet up with scrap and junk.
Tons of scrap, yeah.
Yeah, probably my cast iron 430 all the way in the bottom of it. And he won't let him drive the truck.
Oh, boy.
He writes him a ticket, and he says, you guys got to get different transportation, which nobody had cell phones back then.
No.
And these poor guys had to walk to the train station and leave their truck on the street. So, you know, they had about a 3-mile walk.
Oh, my God.
To get somewhere else, to get somebody to come and pick the truck up. And they had to unload half of it to release the load and everything. So,
oh, my gosh.
Yeah, like I said, it was bad, but it is kind of funny that they got a little something.
But you never got your 430 back.
I never got the 430 back. But I'll, this whole story does kind of come around.
Okay. Well, we can't wait for this.
Yeah, we had to take a hit of hot water there. So I'm continuing my engine swap, and I throw the 455 in the car. And 69 and 70 Buick Rivieras have an electric fuel pump in the tank. Even though they were carbureted,
right?
They were one of the first GM cars to do that. And I knew about the electric fuel pump, but I didn't know that there was an oil pressure switch on the side of the engine that turns the fuel pump off if the engine loses oil pressure. So I didn't have that connected. So I get the engine in the car and everything's done, and I'm cranking and cranking, and it won't start.
Mm.
And I'm trying to figure this out. So it takes me, you know, forever to get this figured out. Finally, I figure it out. Engine starts right up. Everything's great. I'm thinking, this is victory. What do you do? Let's go get, a good hot dog. Get my buddies together. We'll mm-hmm. go take a cruise. We'll get something to eat. And then later on, you know, if I buy them a 99-cent hot dog, they'll help me put the hood back on this thing. So I did not replace the hoses and all that other stuff, nor the clamps.
Oh, no.
No, yeah. So we go to this hot dog place, and it was called Chicago Style Dogs, and it's just this hot dog joint.
Mm-hmm.
And I park up in front, and my car noses up to an area where there's outdoor eating. There's tables and stuff, and there's this family sitting there eating. And, you know, we get out of the car, we go inside, we go to order. Next thing I know, I hear screaming out in front of the restaurant. And I look out in front, and my upper heater hose blew right off the car and was spraying hot coolant in the air all around.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, jeez.
And luckily, they didn't get sprayed with it. Nobody got hurt or anything, but it was quite startling. You know?
Oh, yeah.
And these people were, you know, probably from maybe Pakistan, so they really aren't into the old American car scene.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
They didn't really like that I parked there anyway. And then, mm-hmm. you know, this thing starts spraying hot coolant everywhere.
Oh, man.
And it was because the clamp failed. You know, it was just an overly used, worm clamp. So,
yeah.
So it's wise of you to replace all that.
Well, thank you, Kevin. Thank you very much.
Because this is what can happen.
With my luck, it would happen. For sure. That sounded like a wild ride on your part.
It was. Finally, got that fixed, and you know, the car was good to go after that. But
What happened to your 70?
Well, the 70, unfortunately, I had to get rid of when I moved to California.
Oh, right.
I couldn't bring it with me. Mm. But, you know, it's one of those things that always, at the time, I didn't know how much I would miss the car.
Mm.
And it's kind of the same story that a lot of people have. You know, I never should have sold that car.
Yeah.
And mine was, it was cool because it was a special order car and it was, you know, red with the white interior and blah, blah, blah. But it was kind of a pile. I mean, it was rusty and it needed a complete, you know, restoration. And I just couldn't do it at the time.
Right.
And when I moved to California, I certainly didn't have a garage and, mm-hmm. you know, all the rest of it. I wasn't making any money and I had to let it go. But it was always nagging me in the back of my mind that, you know, I'd like to get another one of those. And this reminds me, you know, you mentioned Foos earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Foos, and I've said it too, a lot of us in the restoration and performance business say something that I'm really starting to take issue with. And that is, you know, Foos will say, I interviewed him at the SEMA show a couple years ago during the SEMA reveal, and he's got this blue turquoise 57 Chevy they just put together.
Yeah, I remember.
Yep, and he jammed with the crew to get it done, and he was being very gracious to the crew and to the owner of the car, because the owner was no doubt paying some pretty heavy bills at the end.
Right.
You know, keeping a full crew going around the clock to get this car done.
Yep.
And Chip said, you know, it's really nice that this happened because nobody needs what we do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this isn't like food or something crucial to life. You know, nobody needs these cars. And I agreed with him at the time. And I've said that too. You know,
mm-hmm.
we have to be conscious of our customers' needs and wants, because this is kind of a luxury item and, you know, you might not really need to have your car restored or whatnot.
Right.
But that 70 Riv story makes me think that I'm not so sure that that's true anymore. I'm not so sure we should be saying that.
Really?
Yes. And the reason why is if you look at how we got interested in cars in the first place. So in your case, going all the way back to when you were a little kid, you know, how did it happen? Was it Hot Wheels? I mean,
well, just seeing cool cars when I was a kid, as well as playing with Hot Wheels, mm-hmm. looking at, you know, Hot Rod magazine, going to the Autorama in Cleveland when I was a kid,
mm-hmm.
all those things really sparked my love for cool cars.
Right. And mine too. And when you start to peel the layers back, Hot Wheels cars are great, you know, toys for kids, because not only are they cool, but they're cheap, right? So
sure.
You can be a family with a couple of kids and you know, very, very modest income and still afford to give your kids a couple of Hot Wheels cars.
Yeah.
But they also become like incentives, you know, like if you cleaned your room or if you didn't beat up your sister or whatever, you know, you might get a reward every once in a while of a Hot Wheels car.
Right.
Right. So, and I think that continues as you get a little bit older, it turns into maybe diecast cars. And from there you get older and maybe it's model kits. And then, you know, from there, you're always reading the magazines along the way that somebody mm-hmm. gives you. And eventually maybe radio control cars, and then, you know, pretty soon you're old enough to have a real one.
That's crazy, because I love all those things.
Well, yeah, and we do. And all those things are given to us along the way as gifts mm-hmm. and as reward items. And they're always kind of hyped up. It's like, ooh, look at this cool, you know, diecast. Uh-huh. And, you know, look at this great RC car, you know, happy birthday. Or I'm going to take you to the car show. Look at how great that 57 Chevy is. And so all these cars are built up. So as you're growing up, I believe the psychology is that we are taught that these things are really important. They're very special.
Sure.
They're very cool. There's something to aspire to. it's good to be, you know, enthused about them, and good behavior will, you know, might land you one. Oh. And there's a lot of positive, but also, you know, maybe unintentional conditioning that goes along with cultivating a car enthusiast.
Huh.
So by the time you're, you know, 16 or, you know, 17, and you're going to get your first car, usually what happens is you don't have any money and
right.
you get some beater and in hopes of getting something, you know, cooler later. But interestingly, you know, you drive that car through high school and, you know, for some people through college, and then you got to get a job, and then life kind of gets in the way, and, you know, you start a family. And like for me, I had to get rid of my cool car because I was mm-hmm. going to start a career, which was a great thing. I'm, you know, not regretting that at all.
Right.
But when you get rid of the car, the desire doesn't turn off.
Correct.
In fact, it gets intensified.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah. So here you are trying to pay the bills and do your daily life and be a good provider and all the rest of it. And in the back of your mind, you're thinking, man, I you know, if I come across another 70 Riv, I'm really going to think about getting one because, you know, I can't do it now because I don't have the money, but, you know, uh-huh. someday. And if you're not thinking about buying one, you're thinking about if you had one, what would you be doing with it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what yeah. wheels would I put on it? And, you know, what color would I paint it? Or thinking back if you had one about the great times that you had with your buddies and all that. And you can't go back and recreate those experiences, but you can have new ones, you know? So there's kind of this anticipation, you know, if I had this car, it'd be so much fun to go to that burger stand or whatever. Spray some more Pakistanis with coolant.
Oh,
what
man.
Have you. So when it's so ingrained and it's put in our minds in such a manner that, again, it's very positive and it tickles our reward center so much. And then that all gets handed off to us on our own when we develop our own curiosity to learn and read more about them, you know, and there's so many cool things to like about cars in general.
Yeah.
So I'm very visual. I always love the style and the design aspect. And
sure.
in fact, I took 3 years of technical drawing and drafting in high school.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. To learn how to draw cars, you know,
right on.
They had me designing bracketry and, you know, eventually architecture and houses. And I just wanted to draw cars. And there's the mechanical side where, you know, you can learn how the machine works and maybe learn how to repair them or make them perform better, go faster, whatever. So in the beginning, they're kind of thrust upon us as toys and gifts. But then at some point, for many of us, we take the reins and our own interest is sparked and fueled and then you're hooked. Now, there are people that, you know, get Hot Wheels cars as a kid who end up not caring. You know, it doesn't do it for them. And that's right. fine, too.
Mm-hmm.
But for those of us who are hooked by it, that occupies our headspace pretty much forever.
Absolutely.
You know?
The times when I have not had this GTO or a cool classic car, I was always thinking about having another cool classic car and missing not having one.
Right.
I got lucky. I had my first GTO. I was 19 years old and in the Air Force. And right after that, I had a 66 Sprint 6 Le Mans. And then right after that, I had a 77 Formula, Firebird Formula. And that was the only cars I've ever wanted.
Right.
Even when I didn't have them, like, man, I still miss my Formula, and I still miss that Sprint 6 Le Mans.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I do have this really cool GTO right behind me, that car, you know, you miss them, and because they do become part of you. And you're right, you do grow up having that be part of your life without you even really knowing it at the time. And that's
yeah.
how it manifests itself when you become an adult.
I agree, you know, and they occupy so much of your headspace that when you're sitting in class in high school or you're sitting in your job when you're 35, the GTO is not, it's probably, you know, two and a half thoughts away from being mainstream.
Right. Exactly.
You know?
Without a doubt.
Right. And you're going to experience this when you get back behind the wheel of yours.
Oh, gee whiz.
There's going to be that feeling of relief and victory and gratification and all the rest of it. Like in my case, eventually it took a long time. It took from 1996 to 2015 to where I found another 70 RIV that was affordable and it mm-hmm. worked out. And when I got this car, this current one, the part of my brain that was agonizing and pining for this car, it all turned off. And it was relieved, you know. It's nice. Like a source of stress was gone. It was like, okay, it's back. I got one. You know?
Yeah.
Mission kind of accomplished.
Also, to that degree, whenever you have been stressed or aggravated, you've hopped into that RIV, taken a ride, and it's helped melt that away.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there's all the other ancillary benefits, mm-hmm. but even just the concept. So when I hear Foos say that nobody needs these cars, I'm starting to take issue with that statement, because you can't tell me that if there's something that you've thought about basically your entire life, you don't need that.
Mm. I see your point.
Yeah. It's an important thing. And I'm the worst at doing this. I downplay, you know, my cars and interests and hobbies as being frivolous and not important, because, you know, like everybody, I've got actual real important stuff. We've got our business and we've got our employees to take care of, and we have, you know, our own bills to pay and all that. And that stuff obviously takes priority. And in the past, I would, you know, not spend the money on the car or mm-hmm. you know, whatever, because I'm always afraid of getting in a bind with, you know, the rest of life.
Right.
But what that does is that prolongs that feeling in your head of not having what you want, which is stressful.
Yeah.
And it doesn't feel good. So I'm to the point now where it's like, well, if you have the money and you know you're going to most likely make some more. So maybe you take a little hit now, but you make it back, but right. it will allow you to perform a little bit better, because this source of, you know, this hole in your head is being filled by something.
Right on, man.
Which I would call a need, you know?
Yes.
For sure.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
I would agree with that. I tell you, I'm so close with this car. I almost can't allow myself to believe it yet, though.
Yeah, I get it.
It's like, how is this going to happen? And is this stuff even going to fit? Is it even going to work? There's mm-hmm. no way this is going to work. This engine's been apart for 3-4 years. It's not going to work.
Yeah.
It's impossible.
Oh, well, man. You're old enough to know that you've had enough experiences that were letdowns.
Mm-hmm.
That you don't want to overbuild it up.
I know.
For fear of something not going right and being very upset.
Oh, I know.
So the expectation is minimal, which is, that's not a bad way to be either, because I find that allows you to be a little more methodical. It's not as hyped and exciting, but, you know, you're paying attention to the details and you're doing what you can to make sure that it's going to work.
Yeah.
You know.
I just have this dread that I'm going to turn the key, I'm going to hear a loud clunk, and there's going to be a crankshaft sitting on the floor.
Well, yeah, that's a concern. That's not going to happen.
No, it's not. It's not, but still, it's just the defeatist in me just sometimes takes over. So I got to tell that guy to go home.
Well, you know, we all have that voice too. Mm-hmm. But you've done steps to prevent that. You had proper machine work done. And,
oh, yeah. Great, you know, machine work.
You bought good parts. And, mm-hmm. you know, you've got all this on your side. You're working with a guy who knows what he's doing to help you assemble it. And
yep.
And you put a roller cam in it, so you're not going to have to worry about the flat cam tin room.
Speaking of that, you know, my buddy Randy's building a 67 El Camino. And he built a 427 big block for it, and he had a flat tappet cam in it, and he broke it in, did everything proper. About immediately after that, the cam lobe started going flat on him.
It's crazy, I know.
Yeah, yeah. So he's pulled it out. He's already has the roller cam and lifters put in. He's about ready to put everything back together. I mean, he had to blow the whole thing apart and clean everything and just start over. I'm like, oh, geez. He's like, yep, I'll never do that again.
It's terrible. And it's happened to us on multiple occasions.
Yeah.
You know, we always stress to our customers the importance of a roller cam. But there are times when, you know, they might have purchased an engine from an engine builder and it's got a flat tappet. And we absolutely super make sure that there's a warranty program in place before we turn the key on this thing.
That's good policy.
And find out what it is and what we have to do so that we don't void that. Because
right.
The last thing you want is to start the thing up and the cam go flat and the guy say, oh, yeah, we used the wrong kind of oil.
Yeah, it's on you.
So it's on you, you know. So we always try to make sure we use everything that they specify and everything else. Because it's nerve-wracking, and we've developed some tricks. I'm sure we didn't develop it, but for us, you know, we came up with some things in our shop. We paint the push rod, a little white stripe on the push rod, and visibly turning. Watch it spin and all that kind of stuff so that we can stack the cards in our favor. But you're not going to have that problem.
Mm-mm.
Because you got a roller.
Yeah. One of the rollers is going to chunk off, though. Just watch. Just watch.
Nah. They'll be fine.
Yeah. I'm excited but nervous. You know, it's hard. It's been so long. It's been years, literally, probably 4 years, 5 years since I've driven this car.
Yeah. Yeah. You're going to have to learn how to drive it all over again.
Yeah, it's going to be weird seeing a long hood in front of me now. I'm like, this is bizarre.
Some of the stuff that, it'll all come right back,
you know,
pretty quick, no doubt. Just today, as a matter of fact, I took that 70 Trans Am for a spin.
Ooh.
That we've been working on.
Oh, man.
Because it's basically finished for what our shop is doing. And it came to us a built car that was not finished, so we were tasked with doing wiring and plumbing and fuel injection and you know, some interior details and other stuff, and we found a few other things that, you know, we wanted to take care of, and it's pretty much good to go now. And that's a Stroker 400, so it's actually a 468, I think. And it's got an Edelbrock Torquer 2, and it's got, I believe, Edelbrock heads on it and a roller cam and a Holley Sniper fuel injection system on it. And it's like 10 and a half or 10 and three quarter to one compression.
Very nice.
And it's an automatic with a 342 gear, turbo 400 with a 3000 stall.
Jeez, I bet it moves.
It really does.
Yeah.
It makes good power, especially, you know, cruising down the highway, and it's got a gear vendor overdrive in it.
Oh, so, nice.
Yeah, you can have that low RPM cruise, but when you put the hammer down, that sucker comes to life.
You suck out loud, Kevin. Stop telling me that.
You'll have that experience soon enough, you know?
Yeah, and I know you posted that picture of that Trans Am and that 70 GTO just for me.
Well, you and
I know you did.
A couple other Pontiac fans.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people responded, you know, to that picture, because those are both very cool cars.
Yeah, they're beautiful.
Mm. Yeah. So, well, that's cool. So, you know, you're in the home stretch, and it's good to think, you know, to hear anyway that you kind of agree with me that maybe we shouldn't be saying that nobody needs this stuff, because I think when you really get down to it, and it doesn't matter if it's cars, it could be, you know, whatever your passion is.
Mm-hmm. You need to fulfill your passion.
Yeah, and people get passionate about different things.
Yeah.
You know, it could be passionate about butterflies. It could be passionate about painting or playing guitar or dancing or whatever.
Yeah.
And to say that you don't need that, I think is wrong.
Yeah. Your passion just satisfies your psyche, and you need to satisfy that. So, yeah, in a couple steps away, that is a need. It is a basic need. You have to, you need to be happy.
Yeah.
So cars makes me happy.
Yep, there you go. So, you know, last time we talked about building models, and I actually found that 53 Chevy gasser kit and bought one.
Right on, man.
I put a feeler out into a Facebook. I don't even know why I didn't think of this the first time. Uh-huh. But rather than going through eBay and saying, oh, it's not here, and Craigslist and everything, you know, it's not here.
Right.
I just took a picture from the net and posted it in this model marketplace group that I'm in on Facebook. And I said, does anybody have one of these? And I got three responses. Yeah, I got one. I'll sell it to you today.
Wow. So, that's awesome, man.
Yes. Struck a deal. That's in the mail right now. I should have it tomorrow, which will scratch that little itch. Mm-hmm. And last weekend, I had a couple unbuilt kits laying around that I started 20 years ago. And I decided to exercise that skill set a little bit and, you know, glue some plastic together and do some painting and
cool. See
how it goes. And my 29 Ford Roadster pickup that I've been, you know, it's a rebuild of a kit that I did when I was a kid.
Uh-huh.
It was going swimmingly. Everything was going so well. It painted up nice. The engine came out really cool. You know, it's time to start putting the body on the frame. And I take some acrylic paint and a touch-up brush, and I thought, you know, I got to do a few touch-ups on the chassis before I put the body on it. Mm-hmm. And it's cold out here in the garage where I'm working, and I'm impatient. You know, I don't want to wait. I want to just get this done. So I figure, well, I can force dry this with some heat. You know, no problem. So I just kind of wave the thing in front of my little bullet heater on the ground, my kerosene torpedo.
Oh my gosh, you and didn't.
It was a solid 3.5 or 4 feet away from it. But because this is these little minute frame rails you know, probably 40-year-old polystyrene, the whole chassis just twists into a pretzel.
Oh, man.
It just instantly warps into garbage.
Ah, jeez.
And I was so mad.
You're probably looking at it in disbelief, like, there's no way that just happened. There's no way that just happened.
Well, half of it was there was no way that happened, and the other half was, of course you screwed it up.
You know? You knucklehead.
Right. But I had to kind of rewind and say, well, the reason why I was doing this, I had my workshop space cleaned up real nice, and I had good music, and I had, you know, a couple hours to myself, and it was very gratifying to put this thing together, even though I messed it up. And it was an enjoyable time.
Well, you doing all that actually motivated me to kind of clean off. I have a desk in my basement that's just been cluttered and had all kinds of just bric-a-brac all over it. And that motivated me to get that cleaned off. And I have a flat workspace now, and I'm gonna start building things again. And I have a couple model kits that have been just sitting in a drawer for the last 5-6 years, and this one I'm going to start building is a 49 Merc Woody Wagon.
And, that's cool.
It should be really cool. And I opened it up. It was still had the plastic on it and everything. And I opened it up and I took it out. And I'm like, oh yeah, I got to paint everything on this thing.
Oh yeah,
I got to do everything. Oh boy, I forgot about that.
Right. Well, it makes you sharpen up some skills that you normally don't use of painting and airbrushing and gluing. And of course, YouTube, I learned some tips that I wish I would have known as a kid.
Sure.
About using clamps and tweezers.
Right.
And, things to help you be successful in your model building kit and not frustrated and get glue fingerprints all over everything and, you know, paint peeling off and all the rest of it.
And have what you call a glue bomb at the end.
That's right. That's right. But doing all that little stuff is, you know, not something that a guy like you is going to do every day. So it's,
right.
It's nice. It's a little personal growth.
Mm-hmm.
And, it feels good to put something together.
And it does.
And create a little bit along the way. So,
yeah, I don't get to work with my hands a lot anymore. So this will be fun.
Well, and yeah, in my world, most of the stuff that I create today is on screen.
Right.
You know, it's video or it's photography. And I go out in the shop where the crew is working. And, you know, there are times when I just really want to pick up a wrench and everyone's looking at me like, just put it down.
Put it down. Walk away slowly.
Yeah. And then I go back in the garage and look at my own cars and put the wrench down again. You know? But, you know, while it's this cold outside, you know, building a model in the wintertime is a little good piece of therapy. So.
Yeah, that's good stuff. That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad you're picking that back up.
Yeah, I can't say I'm going to do, you know, I'm going to dive into this with all 4 feet and, you know, build 1,000 model kits, but there's a couple that I wanted to do. So
sure.
That 53 gasser, I'm smart enough to not dive straight into that one. Going to do a couple others first.
Good.
So I don't screw that up.
Don't screw it up, stupid.
That's it. The immortal words of my dad. Oh, man.
Good stuff, man.
It
good
is
times.
Good stuff. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I'll keep you posted on that whole project. All right. So I know that our listeners are scratching their heads wondering if you got the repeat question right.
Yeah, well, they probably already know that they didn't, but
maybe half of them.
They're probably wondering if you got your question right. So let's let them in on it. So I asked you, Kevin, in 1969 when you went to build your Roadrunner, but you wanted an air grabber hood as well as air conditioning, and I asked you why you couldn't get both, and you said that the air grabber came with other things that weren't conducive to AC. And that's sort of kind of right, but sort of not kind of right. Because I think what you're thinking of is not what the correct answer is. And the correct answer is that the air grabber ductwork would hit the AC compressor when you close the hood.
So it was a space constraint.
It was a space constraint. Yeah, so you couldn't get, you can get one or the other, but not both.
Yeah. Frank, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Frank.
I even acknowledged that in my...
You did. I'm like, oh, he's going to come back to it. He's going to come back to it.
Yeah, but I you know, again, I remember looking at some of those air grabbers with the hood open.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I was looking at a small block or something. It just seemed to me that there might have been enough room for that stuff, but obviously not.
Mm.
All right, I lost that one. Right on. Okay, well, my question to you was about how muscle cars were getting expensive in the 60s. So Car and Driver magazine said, hey, Detroit, you need to build something cheap and no frills again so we can go out and enjoy these things and not have to worry about power windows and high car payments. What Mopar came out with a car that satisfied that need directly, and what was it? And you said... Specifically, it was the Plymouth GTX and not the Roadrunner.
Yeah.
And if you just would have switched those.
God, I knew it! Oh, I knew it.
Because it was the Roadrunner.
It was the Roadrunner.
Yes,
oh.
The Roadrunner came out in bare bones form. I think Mopar or Chrysler spent $50,000 or something licensing the name from the cartoon name for the Roadrunner. And they didn't come with, they came with a 383 and not much else. So,
Michael, how funny that we both had Roadrunner questions, though.
I know. And I tried not to acknowledge that because I didn't want to tip it off because then he would have known.
Yeah, obviously. Well, even still, maybe not. But, I mean, look at my track record.
Well, you could have gone back to whatever that other episode was.
Yeah.
Now we have to hear what you answered on that one. I think you did say GTX last time, too.
I may have to, yeah, because I'm a knucklehead. Oh, brother.
Nice.
That was a great question, though. I liked it.
Yeah.
I liked it both times.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the other one that I was thinking was, what's significant about the tire sizes on an AAR CUDA? Did we have that question before?
I don't think so.
Okay, well then forget I said that.
Said what, man?
The answer is nothing.
Oh, man.
All right. Well, this is good. You know, we took kind of a left turn and delved into the human psyche a little bit, but I think it was good to articulate that concept, and maybe other people will jump on board and give the respect, I guess, that these passion hobbies deserve and not say they're unimportant. Heard it here first, friends.
That's right, man. Take that, Foose. I'm washing my hand now, Chip.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah, your Foose hand.
That's right.
Too funny. So you've burned another episode of VA Radio with us. We appreciate you listening. Again, if you get a chance, hit the subscribe button. And wherever you listen, there might be an easier way to listen. You might be listening on, say, iHeartRadio, and you might not have known that you can just yell out, "Hey, Alexa, play the V8 Radio podcast," and it'll just magically happen. So we want to make it easy for you, however you want to listen. If you go to our website, v8radio.com, there's a whole listing with links of all the different places, I think, or most of them, that you can tune in and enjoy the show however you'd like. And we certainly appreciate you tuning in and spending some time with us. If you have any comments, throw them on our Facebook page, or you can comment on some of the other podcast outlets. We're always happy to hear the feedback, right?
Absolutely. And please leave a review if you feel so inclined.
That's right. Remember, more stars is good.
I like it.
Yes. All right. So I think that's about all we got for this time. We don't want to use up too much because we got to do another one of these at some point.
I used up all my words.
You used up all my trivia questions.
I have to think of more.
Yeah. So I'm Kevin Ostie for Mike Cueball Clark. You've been listening to V8 Radio. We appreciate it. And we're reminding you to keep all four wheels under the shiny side under 100. See you next time.